The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello everyone, welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, I'm joined by Gray Oldenburg and Nathan Glidewell. Now let's jump into AAA. The first story we have today is on January 1st, as most people were, I was tuned in the Cincinnati Bengals Buffalo Bills game on Monday Night Football. However, in the first quarter, with Bengals leading 7-3 and their offense driving down the field, wide receiver T. Higgins caught a 13-yard pass and was tackled by Bills safety DeVar Hamlin, who was hit in the head and chest area by Higgins during the tackle. Hamlin initially got up, but then immediately collapsed on the field, and within 10 seconds, medical personnel rushed onto the field to tend to Hamlin, who was then surrounded by players from both teams. An ambulance was on the field in less than 5 minutes, and Hamlin was given CPR for several minutes before being taken to the hospital. According to a memo from NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, Hamlin experienced a cardiac arrest and was resuscitated by on-site club physicians and independent medical personnel. On Friday, January 6th, Hamlin addressed his teammates and coaches on FaceTime saying, "Love you, boys." And as of January 9th, 2023, the UC Health Center physicians have announced that DeMar Hamlin has been released from the hospital and is back in Buffalo, and he will now go to another hospital and continue to undergo tests and be monitored. All right, guys, what are y'all's thoughts on what happened with DeMar Hamlin, and do you think the NFL handled it correctly?
Yes, I think that obviously thoughts and prayers go out to Hamlin. It's incredible news that we got today of this, that we're recording this, that he's been released from the UC Health Medical Center, which is, I talk about progress making in 9 days from where he was suffering that cardiac arrest on the field to where he is now. But seeing the come together and the prayers and the outreach and the blowing up of his GoFundMe for his toys for kids that he started, it's special. It's good to see the NFL and, you know, humans come together for support and for prayers for something like this and for a guy like DeMar. And obviously you see the power of prayer with how he's doing today.
Obviously, first things first, thoughts and prayers out to DeMar Hamlin and his family. I hope he continues improving, and I know it's going to be a journey for him, but he's definitely a fighter. He's shown that. As far as the NFL goes, they handled this the best they could. I really appreciate them understanding that this moment in time was bigger than football. This goes beyond football. This goes into a person's life. What DeMar Hamlin has done outside of football and the type of impact he makes on his community around him. And they recognize that, and they did the right thing by canceling this game. And for the people who, you know, were opposed to that idea, I get where they're coming from a little bit. You know, as a football fan, you don't want to see a game canceled. But in this moment in time, the situation was way bigger than football in general. And, you know, you always look back at, you know, the connections, because football, it's a sport at the end of the day. And, you know, everything taking place outside of football is way bigger than it. But at the end of the day, a lot of the stuff comes back to being connected through football. So I guess we can really appreciate the fact that DeMar Hamlin plays this sport and is connected with such a great group of people and has these great supportive people around him that really, you know, improve his life. And it shows that people really care about everyone in this league.
Yeah, like you said, Nathan, this is definitely bigger than football. I'd like to give a shout-out to the ESPN and ABC crews, including Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Lisa Salters, Booger McFarland, Adam Scheffner, Ryan Clark, Scott Van Pelt, and many more. I think they did a great job, really professional, covering the entire thing. Yeah. Definitely, like y'all said, thoughts and prayers with DeMar as well. But I'd also like to talk about the Skip Bayless tweet when he tweeted it right as soon as DeMar Hamlin went down. Kind of felt really insensitive. The next day, Shannon Sharp refused to be on the show, Undisputed, with Skip. I really disagree with the way he tweeted, and he really didn't show much remorse for tweeting it at that time. The tweet read, "No doubt the NFL is considering postponing the rest of this game, but how this late in the season, a game of this magnitude is crucial to the regular season outcome. which suddenly seems so irrelevant. I think that was really kind of insensitive at that current moment. And the fact he didn't, you know, apologize wholeheartedly for that kind of bothers me. And then Bart Scott, you know, he appeared to assign blame to D. Higgins for the injury on ESPN the next day as well. He said right before the tackle, he lowered his helmet and kind of throws his body into Hamlin's chest. He's standing up because he's thinking he's got to chase D. Higgins at an angle to make a tackle. So he didn't expect T. Higgins to launch his body back into him. It's one of those things you see as a linebacker. So what do y'all guys think about the way Skip Bayless and Bart Scott, you know, talked about that the day after?
I think, starting with the Bart Scott thing, you can absolutely not put anything or any hate towards T. Higgins or any cause on Higgins for this. This was a football play. It was a fantastic tackle by DeMar Hamlin. Let's give him credit immediately. That is a football play. He did not launch straight at his chest. He launched forward, which happened to be at his chest. So you cannot put any blame on T. Higgins at all. And right when it was happening and during the night of the first, after the game, and when they decided they were going to postpone, some of the pictures and some of the videos and some of the crowd reactions that were worried about Hamlin, and I'm as worried as I was about DeMar Hamlin, you've got to understand that there are at least 100, 150, 200 people out there that are very, very close to DeMar Hamlin, and even people that are wearing Bengals jerseys. And one of them is listed in the play, and that's T. Higgins. And you just cannot put any blame on Higgins for this. With the Skip Bayless tweet, just like Nathan said, this was bigger than football. I mean, he just like he said in the tweet, he said, that game was so crucial to the end of the year, which it was, but who cares? This was way bigger than football at that time. And I agree with you, Alex. It was very insensitive and uncalled for.
To start off with Skip Bayless, I mean, he's known to have been controversial with some of the stuff he's tweeted about, some of the stuff he said on the show. He's all around just trying to get reactions out of people. And for the people who do that, that's disgusting. Yeah. And in this moment in time, when Skip Bayless tweeted that, it is even more insensitive. And, you know, it really shows a lack of empathy for human beings. So Skip Bayless saying that and then later on not really apologizing for it or showing no remorse for what he did is just overall really disgusting for him. And you know, I really think that he should not have a show anymore because of that. But as far as Bart Scott goes, they're playing a football game. Yeah. And for people who have played football, you're moving very fast. These are split-second decisions. There's no way T. Higgins had this maliciousness to just go and hurt DeMar Hamlin. Yeah. And to honestly assign blame to a player who's just trying to play the game is disgusting too. And, you know, for people like Bart Scott and people who have played football in the past, they should be the first ones to understand that he didn't really intend to hurt him, especially because of the relationship T. Higgins has to DeMar Hamlin.
Yes.
All right, the second story we have today is the University of Texas has fired men's basketball head coach Chris Beard amid a domestic family violence charge. Associate head coach Rodney Terry will remain in charge for the remainder of the season. Do y'all think this was the right move for Texas to fire Chris Beard?
Yes, absolutely. This is another weird situation with a coach who's had very good recent success and Texas soared to top of the rankings here at the beginning of the year before conference play started and then took a loss, has taken a few losses since. And now they have to have this huge midseason adjustment without their head coach after Beard gets fired for cause, which he should have. And now Texas has to figure out some things. It's a very athletic and talented team with the Longhorns. Rodney Terry, I expect him to do a very good job. I expect him to go look for a new coach. But I do think Texas made the right move here.
It's just one of those things where it is extremely irresponsible by Chris Beard to go and have these issues and be an overall distraction for his team and his school. It draws a lot of negative attention to your athletic department that you have these type of issues. And it's just overall disgusting that he has domestic family violence charges against him. I don't understand why any human being would want to hurt members of their family. But Texas did what they were supposed to do and where they fired him. It really has affected the Longhorns recently. I know they lost to Kansas State in this past week. So you can definitely tell it takes a toll on the players. It really is a distracting thing that has happened. But for them to just kind of persevere through all this, it'll be hard, but I'm sure they can do it.
Yeah, and an arrest affidavit posted by a Orange Bloods reporter, it said that Chris Beard allegedly choked her with his arm from behind for about 5 seconds, and he slapped her glasses off her face as well. That being his fiance, I personally can't respect anybody that strikes a woman in that manner, any under any circumstances whatsoever. So I think they made the right decision getting rid of Chris Beard at this time. All right, the third and final story, AAA today, is in a statement to the Crimson Tide Sports Network. The voice of Alabama football, Eli Gold, announced that he was diagnosed with a treatable form of cancer and added that he's making progress and hope he returns behind the mic soon. Obviously, this year, he was Chris Stewart did the calls in place of Eli Gold. What are some of y'all's favorite calls or moments from Eli Gold in his time as the voice of Alabama football?
Well, first off, obviously, thoughts and prayers go out to Eli and his family. His involvement with the University of Alabama is so inspiring, and his work that he's done in the past, it's great. He's an unbelievable. He is one of the greats in sportscasting in general, not just in radio, but in every aspect possible. He's a very, very good announcer. Some of my favorite memories, I'm not an Alabama fan, so my favorite memories may not be the touchdowns that they scored, but one of the best calls that I ever heard Eli Gold call was the T.J. Yeldon screen pass touchdown against LSU. I believe that was in 2011, 2012. I just remember hearing that call, and even as an Auburn fan, as an outsider coming from somebody who did not want Alabama to win or did not want LSU to win, I wanted both teams to lose that game, and it was just a very impressive call. He is a great, and we hope to see him behind the mic very soon.
Obviously, it's very hard to hear that Eli Gold is, suffering from being diagnosed with cancer, and I know he's had problems this past year. And of course, Chris Stewart has done a terrific job taking over. But really, I hope to see Eli Gold back here soon. And I know he's under the best care possible, being connected with the team and all that. But like going back and looking in the past, just remembering certain calls he made, I think one of the biggest is probably when DeVonta Smith caught the game-winning touchdown in overtime to beat Georgia in the national championship. I think that was probably one of the biggest. Of course, T.J. Yeldon screen pass. That was always huge for me. I remember that game like it was yesterday.
Yeah, like y'all said, thoughts and prayers with Eli Gold. He's one of the main reasons I'm doing what I'm doing right now, doing the show with y'all. Really an inspiration to many people around the state of Alabama. Hope he gets better soon. Want to see him behind that mic. But like y'all said, Chris Stewart did a great job in his place. One of my favorite calls was the Marcell Dareys pick six in the 09 national championship. That was actually one of the first games, Alabama games, I sat down and watched for the entirety of it, being 7 years old. So that was really something I liked. I always go back and look at that when I want to just listen, watch a lot of my highlights and listen to him talk. All right, Nathan, or no, sorry, Gray, what do you got for college basketball this week, past week?
Yeah, so two games starting to kick it real into the real meat of the SEC season for both Alabama and Auburn. Let's start with Alabama. Alabama ends up picking up two wins, two dominant performances for the Crimson Tide this week, both at home. One, the first one against Ole Miss. Alabama won by a score of 84 to 62. The second one on Saturday against University of Kentucky, and Alabama won 78 to 52, which is the largest program win over the Wildcats ever. First, let's start off with this Ole Miss game. Nathan, what did you see from this Alabama team in this dominating performance?
Yeah, and we started off hot, and we just didn't stop. Our defense was constricting. Ole Miss could not do anything. They shot 8% from three, and that's the kind of defense you want to see year round. It also helps that we shot 45% from three, making 9 of our 23 pointers, and just really dominant. We hit the boards well, even though I think they did out rebound us by like 4 boards. But we really moved the ball around, and it's just one of those games where you have these key scores in Brandon Miller, and they just kind of take over the game, and you just don't look back.
Yeah, absolutely. What
yeah,
about you, Alex?
Yeah, looking at both these games, like y'all said, defense was amazing. I thought I was watching a Nick Saban coached defense right there, the way they played, shutting down both Ole Miss and Kentucky. Oscar Tshiebwe was actually shut down by Charles Bediako. Really surprised by that, considering Charles Bediako played terribly against Ole Miss, shooting 2 for 10 the previous game. But I also like to shout out Javon Quinterly. I've been overly critical of him the past few shows. This week he played really well in both games, having 11 points against Ole Miss and 12 points against Kentucky, having 0 turnovers in both games. Really a step forward by him. He's really coming into his own after recovering from that torn ACL last year.
Yeah, I'll say this. How about Alabama keeping it below 10 turnovers in both games this week? That is something I've been very critical of, and they improved. And they proved me wrong, so let's continue to have this train rolling.
Yeah, absolutely. That's becoming a very key factor in a lot of teams' SEC plays. Let's talk for a second about Kentucky. What in the world was that on Saturday? If you're looking at this from a Kentucky fan perspective, Jacob Toppin goes 1 of 10. Wallace, who's their top guard, goes 1 of 13. Sevier Wheeler goes 7 of 16. Oscar Tshiebwe goes 1 of 7, getting absolutely shut down, even on the boards, by Charles Bediako. That's the leading rebound of the country last year. What does John Calipari need to do to get these Wildcats back to what we are used to them being?
Well, I'll go ahead and start. They just – this was a bad game for them. They couldn't shoot. They couldn't do anything, really. They were outplayed in every facet of the game. So, really, it's just one of those games you just got to move on, and you got to play the next game. They have talent. There's no doubt. You've seen the recruiting classes. They have the Naismith Player of the Year and Oscar Tshiebwe. So, there's no doubt they have the ability to go out and win these games. It's just a matter of execution. You've got to be able to shoot the ball. You can't afford to go 1-13, 1-10, 1-7, and be a good team like Alabama. As far as Oscar Tshiebwe goes, he was 1-7 with 4 points and only 6 rebounds. He was a total no factor in this game. And when your top player on your team really puts up a terrible performance, it really affects the people around them. So, you see people like Jacob Toppin going 1 for 10. There's not really any huge chemistry between them when that happens.
Yeah, I really just think that you need to look at this game, look at the film, look at what they need to improve, and just move on. It's one of those games where the lid just on the basket and you can't get off of it. Like you said, Nathan, just move on.
Yeah, moving on to talk about the Auburn Tigers, a tale of two different teams and two different games. For the Auburn Tigers this week, as on Wednesday they go to Athens, Georgia, and lose to the new head coach Mike White there by a score of 76-64. Georgia really, really dominant in that game. Auburn struggling to put the ball in the basket, and just overall just complete struggle fest from Auburn outside of a guy like Jani Broom, who went for 22 points, 12 rebounds, and 6 blocks. But then you come home on Saturday to play the 13th-ranked Arkansas Razorbacks, a game that Auburn fans have had their eye on since last year when we went there without Zepp Jasper as the number one team in the country and lost in overtime. And you win by 13 by a score of 72-59 in a true dominating performance, especially from the guards. There was something that we haven't seen from Auburn in a while. And I want to preface this, and I'll let y'all talk about both of these games. Tom Hart, who's an SEC Network color analyst, who's on the broadcast, and he was on the broadcast for the Arkansas game this week, he said it the absolute best way as you could possibly say this. If Wendell Green plays bad, Auburn's going to play very, very bad. If Wendell Green plays average and plays okay, Auburn's going to play average or okay. if Wendell Green plays great, Auburn's going to play great. And that's just how it went in these two games. In Wendell Green, Green went 2 of 12 and 0 of 6 from 3 and for just 7 points against Georgia. Auburn loses by 12. Wendell Green against Arkansas goes 5 of 8 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3, 7 of 9 from the free throw line, has 19 points, 5 assists, and 3 rebounds. Auburn wins by 13. That is quote-unquote what Tom Hart said. I think that's the perfect way to describe it and what the future of this Auburn team is going to be about. What did y'all see from Auburn in these two games?
Yeah, going ahead and starting with this game against Georgia, it's, you know, kind of what we've seen all year where Auburn has struggled to shoot the ball from three, shooting just 21% in this game. And Georgia taking advantage of some of the mistakes Auburn made and just really getting out to a lead and not giving it away. As far as the Arkansas game goes, it's a complete flip around. It's opposite. It's, you know, one of those things, you had this game at home, top 15 team coming into town. Of course, the fans are going to be hyped for it. The team's going to be ready. And they just proved that, you know, they had the energy, they had the chemistry to be able to put it all together and beat these big teams. It's just a matter of consistency. Yep. With Auburn, and they just got to keep doing this week in and week out and then put on the same performance they did against Arkansas every single game.
Yeah, usually we talk about a tale of two halves when you're talking about teams, but this was a tale of two games, like you said, Gray. Auburn looked atrocious against Georgia. I don't know what was going on there. Everybody played bad outside of Jahni Broome. But then against Arkansas, it looked like Bruce Pearl gave that team a stern talking to after the Georgia game, yeah. And they kind of woke up and destroyed Arkansas. Going into this game, I thought Auburn had zero chance after losing to Georgia. But Wendell Green and Alan Flanagan played really well, kept that team going along against Arkansas. Arkansas only ended up making 2 3-pointers out of 16, which is really kind of the key factor there when you look at this final score. But also, I'd talk about Johan Traor. He looks lost about 100% of the time he's on the court. He doesn't know where he's at. I'm not sure if he thinks he's playing basketball or if he's playing volleyball. He just runs around haphazardly. He's definitely not a five-star like people listed him as. His fit's even worse than the way he plays.
Yeah. It's crazy.
He's not good.
He looks like a deer in the headlights, just like you said, Alex. He's the second highest ranked player to ever sign at Auburn behind former number three pick in the draft from the Houston Rockets, Jabari Smith from last year. And he just doesn't look like he knows where he is. He doesn't look like he knows he's playing basketball, just like you said. And I don't know if that's a confidence thing. I don't know if that's a not fitting in thing. I don't know if that's a system thing. I don't know if it's a, well, I'm not better than Jalen Williams anyway at the four position. So I just, you know, whatever. But every time he's out there, just like you said, Alex, it's just a struggle and a struggle and a struggle. And it's, in the Arkansas game, he played a few minutes and was minus three plus minus and had a completely horrible charge call, a horribly missed corner three, and a missed defensive assignment that led to an Arkansas dunk because Auburn was playing zone. And you could see it in Wendell Green's face right after the missed blown assignment on defense. He was like, dude, what are you doing? What are you doing?
He doesn't even
and
know.
So it led to a lot of different lineups. Because we thought Jalen Williams and Traor were going to split a lot at the four position. Now you're seeing lineups with Chris Moore and Alan Flanagan out there at the same time, the two small forwards. And I like that lineup because those are our two best wing defenders, because we're going to end up playing teams, especially down the stretch and into February. When you get into that deep stretch of the SEC, playing teams like Alabama and Tennessee and Kentucky, who have those longer, good athletic wing guards, you're going to need those two out there, especially at the same time. So I think it's a – out of the five-star playing really, really bad, there's the plus. So, Alex, what do you got from the NFL this past weekend, last week, the NFL?
Yeah, so with 2:51 left to play, down three, the Jacksonville Jaguars safety, Rayshon Jenkins, knocked the ball out of Titans quarterback Josh Dobbs' hands, and it was recovered by linebacker Josh Allen for a touchdown to put the Jaguars ahead 20-16. And then on the ensuing drive, on a 4th-and-13, Joshua Dobbs hits running back Hassan Haskins on a check down, like absolutely nowhere near the first down, to secure the win in AFC South Division title for the Jaguars. What did y'all think about the Titans' play call in that 4th-and-13 and the execution? And do you think the Jaguars will make noise in these playoffs?
I think the Jaguars do have a chance to make noise in the playoffs. Problem is some of their matchup that there's some really good teams coming out of that, you know, AFC. So, you know, I don't know how much noise they're going to make, but obviously we didn't think the Bengals were going to make noise last year and they ended up going to the Super Bowl. So you can't count a team out, especially a team playing so well right now like the Jaguars. But what in the world was that play call, 4th-and-13 from the Titans? So, yes, you get the fumble. Josh Allen takes it back. Right now you still got a chance. Now you got a chance to go drive down, score, and put this thing away and go to the playoffs. They get to 4th-and-13, and they have three wide receivers go out for a 14-yard hitch route. And Jacksonville's just sitting on the hitch route, and Josh Dobbs has to throw the check down to the running back, and he gets 6 or 7 yards and gets tackled. That play call make absolutely zero sense. It really does show that the Titans, when they cannot run with a guy like Derrick Henry, when they get in the 4th-and-13 situation, they don't have that ability. So I don't know. What do you think, Nathan?
I mean, at this point, I think I'm just watching Madden simulation games, the way these people play. It's like watching an AI. 4th-and-13, you're throwing a check down. I guess they don't really want to win this game. They don't really feel like going to the playoffs. So good luck next year. I really don't understand the decision with throwing a check down when the game is on the line. Of course, I just feel absolutely terrible for Derrick Henry, who continues to try to carry his team to victory, yet he just has people like Joshua Dobbs making key mistakes and losing them in the football game.
Yeah, Nathan, we were talking about this earlier. You know, this Titans team is really bad outside of Derrick Henry and somebody like Jeffrey Simmons. They really did LeBron. Derrick Henry just carried them through the entire game. At this point, I wouldn't be surprised if teams come out next year in just a goal line defense and just force them to throw the ball, because their quarterback's awful. Their wide receivers are awful. This team just needs to trade everything and move on, rebuild, because the way they're structured right now, there's no chance they're going to win anything anytime soon.
I agree.
All right. So this past weekend, the Bears, Chicago Bears, secured the number one overall pick in the 2023 NFL draft. This happened because on a 4th-and-20, Houston Texans quarterback Davis Mills found tight end Jordan Akins for a touchdown and then found him again for the 2-point conversion to win the game against the Colts. So who do you think the Bears will trade this pick for to one of these quarterback needy teams, or do you think they'll take somebody like Will Anderson with this pick?
I think they should take Will Anderson, go get the quote unquote Khalil Mack that you traded away a few years ago. But I imagine they will listen for options, especially teams in the lower top 10 or early of the teens area, or a team that has multiple first round draft picks. And then the Bears can draft back and get two guys for their one pick. Because the plus for the teams outside of the Texans to get that number one pick is to be able to pick before the Texans to go get a quarterback that they want, whether that's Bryce Young or CJ Stroud or whoever. So what I think they should take Will Anderson, but we've got a long road ahead before that decision is made.
Yeah. And really reminds me of a certain year where the Jets just had to go and win a football game and give Jacksonville the first overall pick. And now you had Trevor Lawrence making the boss and Zach Wilson on the bench. So it's really one of those key victories. You're gonna, why are you winning this game? Just take everyone out. I know that isn't really the competitive way to, you know, play football, but when it comes down to the first overall pick and the second overall pick, it's kind of a huge deal right there. The Titans, of course, are QB needy, even though Davis Mills has played decent for the situation he's been put in.
Yeah.
But now with the Bears having the first overall pick, and there are so many more opportunities for them to have success. Let's just hope they don't mess it up as they've messed up stuff in the past.
Yeah, I think the Bears are going to look at what their options are trading-wise. I think if they don't get what they want, they're going to take Will Anderson. He's miles better than Jalen Carter. I don't think Jalen Carter is a big game wrecker like Will Anderson is. But I think if somebody like the Colts or maybe the Raiders, who've moved on from Derek Carr, it seems like, give them an offer they can't refuse. You're going to see the Bears trade down, and somebody's going to hop to Texas and take Bryce Young or CJ Stroud, whoever they identify is the best quarterback in this class. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game, and also being on the lookout for a special announcement coming this week.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.